Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You've got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Delta Flyers' journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors, Terry Farrell, Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong.
For the complete version of this podcast with all the incredible bonus material, check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers and sign up to become a patron today. Hello, team.
Hello.
I almost called you Tom and Jerry. My good friends, Tom and Jerry.
You know, the cartoon characters. Yes.
Which one of you guys would be the cat and which one would be the mouse?
I think Robbie's the cat.
Yeah, probably.
Because he's older
than me. As the character, too. Like, yeah.
He's the cat. Yeah. I'm the mouse.
So you're smarter?
Is that how it, I can't remember, Tom.
Is the mouse smarter than the cat?
Yeah, Jerry's more clever than Tom.
Well, I think in the real world, I think in the real world, most cats are smarter than mice, is my guess. Maybe I'm.
Are they?
Oh, maybe not. Maybe they have the same intelligence levels, but it seems like cats
mice are smarter than me because we had field mice in our garage for weeks.
They evaded you.
I think I mentioned this, and I would catch them in these. Don't kill traps, these little...
Yes, you know. You go to your neighbor's yard and empty it out.
Yeah, I didn't empty it out. And then they just come back. And finally, I Google.
You got to drive farther away.
You got to drive 2 miles away.
Yes, so we did talk about this.
So mice are smarter than me, I'm just going to say.
Or they have some type of natural homing beacon that gets them back to their nest.
But I haven't... No field mice for a couple of months now, so we're good.
That's good.
Yes, it's very good.
That's real good.
Okay.
Betty killed a pack rat and a mouse the first week she was at my house.
Wow.
Haven't seen another one since.
Good for Betty.
What's a pack rat? I thought a pack rat is a person that has a bunch of junk. No, there's a type
named after a pack rat that steals stuff and takes everything it can. And when they make their nest, the one I found was in my wood pile. And they use bits of cactus to protect their nest.
Wow.
Wow.
So when I found it, those needles went right through my leather glove.
Oh! They are really smart, these pack rats.
I was grabbing for wood and my hand went
into the thorn. So essentially, pack rats are kleptomaniac rats. They take everything and stick it into their nest.
Yeah, and they
look
different. Their faces are kind of... fat and furry,
yes,
sticking out,
I googled it, Terry.
Did you?
Right now,
aren't
I googled
ugly?
It. Yeah, they've got kind of like, they don't have the tails with just skin like regular mice.
They have hairy tails.
They have hairy tails.
Whoa!
And I googled it, and up came a picture of a monster pack rat that looks the size of my dog. So they can grow big too. So I'm terrified.
Yeah, that was big enough. It was the size. Yeah. You're welcome.
Oh my goodness.
If you have nightmares, you can call me. My ringer's off, but I will.
I got to say, it's always a good day when I learn something.
I don't know you were sufficiently traumatized.
Yes.
I always say it's a good day when you learn something new. And this is something new.
We always learn something new on this podcast.
Well,
and you learn even more. You learn even more if you sign up for patreon.com/the Delta Flyers.
You do.
We actually have school.
You know, our free podcast that goes out to everybody, our free podcast, it's great. It's wonderful. But it's sort of like the stepping stone to a much more deeper dive, which is what the bonus material does. You can subscribe for a month and just try it out. See if you like it. I guarantee you will. So that's the test. You don't have to be there the entire year. Just try it.
Speaking of deep dive, I've got to bring up something. This episode we're doing today was being filmed, the two-parter of your season three opening, was being filmed while we were doing our pilot of Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy. Yeah.
Which was a two-parter. Crazy. So this two-parter was being filmed when our two-parter was being filmed. To film our two-parter, it was a 31-day shoot. Was what it was. Robbie and I worked 30 of the 31 days. We worked more than anyone else. Janeway worked 16 of the 31. I don't know how that happened, but that's just the way it
was. Oh, because you have to be available. Yeah, they want to make sure you're there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. What?
Well, she was recast.
She was recast. So
yeah, but in total, at the end of it,
squeezed all her work into 16 days. They split ours out.
Maybe. Yeah.
But I was in my, Westmore did her makeup, did my makeup.
That's right.
And because I wasn't the captain, I had to come to Mike.
Oh. So you came to our trailer?
Yeah.
You did?
I do kind of remember this now.
They do my hair first, and then I would come and do my beauty makeup. If they need me in rehearsal, they'd pull me and take me for rehearsal, and then I'd come back.
How many times did you come in over to our trailers? Like,
well,
a lot?
Almost every day.
Every
yeah.
time that she worked, Robbie.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
You know,
sometimes you just get your hair and makeup done.
Yeah.
And you sit in your trailer and you get sent home after 15 hours, too.
True.
Well, maybe not 15, true. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Once in a while, that long, where you're at the end of and they're like, we're not getting to your scene.
Mm. Those are always fun days. Yeah.
We talked
and
about
you
this.
Have a 9.5 hour turnaround.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. A recent episode of Delta Flyers, we talked about, one of the prophets asked about, did call sheet number dictate any type of scheduling? In terms of filming. And we said, no, it didn't. But clearly in makeup and hair prep, call sheet number did dictate some type of, in terms of the scheduling, because Kate was
seniority
one.
Or priority.
Seniority, yeah.
Oh,
and then,
well, sure. You know, if you're the lead character or female lead, male lead, the two top or both women, I guess it would be Kate and Jerry at a certain point. But right. when you, yeah, they have to protect them the most because they're in the show the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that makes total sense. It doesn't mean that those of us below aren't there in tandem with them, but mm-hmm. they are the leads. So they have more dialogue. They have more work days. They have more to do.
Right. I was just referring to the fact that you had to leave your end and come to our side of it. You know what I'm saying? Because
Mike did my makeup for him to qualify for, because he was the head of hair and makeup, well, for all of our shows, but still to qualify for an Emmy, he had to do someone's makeup on the show. So it was easier to do like Kate's because it's practical beauty makeup. And me, he just had to paint the spots in beauty makeup. So the spots was easier than having to do any kind of prosthetic piece on my face.
I never knew that he had to do somebody's
do
makeup.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah, because he was in charge of everything. You'd think that would automatically give him an Emmy, but interesting.
Yeah, yes, and head of makeup is head physically. Of hair and makeup.
Oh, okay.
Right.
That person on a set, whoever's in charge of makeup, they are in charge of both departments.
Right. Interesting.
Hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
I didn't know that either. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're learning new stuff all the time.
Yay.
Yay.
Wow. Well, we have some birthdays, right? We have a few more birthdays here. Yeah, we've got Dominique Weidel? Is that a German?
It is, but it's Weidel.
Weidel. Dominique Weidel on November 11th. Happy birthday, Dominique.
Happy birthday, Dominique.
Happy birthday, Dominique. Alles Gute zum Geburtstag auf Deutsch, Dominique. Next up, we have Morgan Ayala Renteria, whose birthday is on November 15th. So happy birthday to Morgan.
Happy birthday, Morgan.
Happy birthday, Morgan.
Annie Davey, happy birthday, November 16th. Happy birthday, Annie.
Happy birthday, Annie.
Happy birthday, Annie.
Thank you for that. That was great, Garrett. Sure. That was like your own birthday song.
It really was.
It was a whole new birthday song, ladies and gentlemen. Garrett just wrote it. It's now official.
He wrote it, produced it, and directed it.
Yes. Roxanne Ray, you've also got a birthday on November 17th. Happy birthday, Roxanne.
Happy birthday, Roxanne.
Happy birthday, Roxanne.
And we have Scott Bowling, November 13th. Happy birthday, Scott Bowling.
Happy birthday, Scott Bowling.
Happy birthday, Scott. Time for some poetry. Yes, let's go with our limerick, and then we're going to go to Terry's poetry, and then I'll bring it home. I'll bring it on home with the haiku. With
the haiku, the abstract and elegant haiku.
Yes.
We'll start with a little limerick. Goes a little something like this. Season 3 starts. Things look pretty glum. Facing the Jem'Hadar could be really dumb. Quark's exit is swift. Bashir's got a piloting gift. Odo finds his home and where he came from.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Good job.
There we go.
You did a good job.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
Dare fair.
It doesn't sound like a glum episode. But wait. Sisko introduces the team to the Defiant. On this ship, DS9 becomes Reliant. Odo is obsessed with a personal mission, takes Kira to Omicron Nebula without permission. O'Brien, Dax, and the Defiant are captured. Seems the Jem'Hadar can't be fractured.
Oof. Oh, nice.
That was vicious. It was just cool.
We like it. There's some tricky rhyming words.
There was.
That you figured out.
It's becoming more and more deft. You know, the when she, how she's going about it, the actual poem itself, we're sitting there getting, ooh, wow. It's like we're at a sporting event, Robbie. Like we'll hear one stanza, ooh, we're both very, you know, taken aback by Terry's.
Didn't we try rapping at one point?
Let's not go there.
Gosh, please.
It was not good.
If Sir Rock comes on the show, yes. Maybe. Let him do it.
Yes.
But not us.
Not us.
We're not going to rap.
No.
That was a fail. Okay. Yeah. How's our haiku?
Oh, yes. Okay. Here we go. Here's my haiku for The Search, part one. Ben brings Defiant. Mission to find the founders. Odo returns home.
Oh,
that's it.
Nice.
Thank you.
They're very elegant haikus.
Yes. Yeah. Because originally I didn't have Odo Returns Home. And I was like, you know what? The second time I watched it, that's a big part of this episode.
Yes.
Instead, I said something like the cloak fails, you know, cloaking device fails. And I was like, no, that's not going to do it.
So I had to There was a lot happening.
There's a lot going on in this one.
A lot, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Should we talk guest stars?
Let's do.
Okay. Salome Jens. Am I pronouncing that name correctly, Terry? Is it Salome?
Yes.
Is how she says it? Okay. Salome Jens as the lead female changeling, I suppose, has appeared also in a TNG episode, The Chase, as an ancient humanoid, and evidently will appear in a total of 14 episodes of DS9 as female changeling.
Oh,
so
whoa.
Now we know. It's a little spoiler. She's going to be back for sure.
Okay.
Big storyline. We also have Martha Hackett. And the minute I heard her speak, I knew immediately, even through all that Romulan makeup, that was Martha Hackett, who played Seska on Voyager. We love Martha. Martha appeared in the TNG episode All Good Things, the finale. Also, 13 episodes of Voyager as Seska. And also did the voice of a Klingon in Star Trek Klingon the Game. And then we have John Fleck as Ornithar. If you guys recall, he was the Karma that was on the ship, kind of on the Defiant, investigating everything, being very nosy.
Yes.
He appeared in the TNG episode, The Mind's Eye. Also, 3 episodes of DS9, all different characters.
Oh,
he played.
Wow.
So not just Ornithar, but 2 other aliens, I'm guessing. He also appeared in the Voyager episode, Alice. So you worked with him, Robbie.
I did. Well, I worked with him in that episode because that was a Tom Paris episode. And I also directed him a couple of times, I think, on Enterprise.
Yes. And that was my next little point there. He appeared as the recurring character of Silic in Star Trek Enterprise. So you directed him a couple of times there. Great.
Yeah.
One other point about John Fleck that I found.
Yes.
Which I remember vividly. Was that John Fleck was in the music video for the ZZ Top song Legs.
Oh, yes, that's right.
He was?
Yeah.
Finally, we have Kenneth Marshall as Michael Eddington, who appears in 9 episodes of DS9 as Eddington.
Is he the security officer? Is that
He's that security guy that walks in with Martha Hackett in the very beginning.
Yes.
That's Michael Eddington.
So he's going to be around. He and Odo are going to butt heads a bit.
He is definitely going to be around, and Odo's already butted heads with him. Yeah. And he also was at Juilliard as well.
Really?
So,
Yeah.
He's a Juilliard guy. I guess when he was when he was there at the same time as Robin Williams, I think. I don't know. It just seems like.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's born in. Let me just see what the birth year of this guy is. But
while you look it up, I want to say that Martha and I did a con together, and she said, "Well, I worked on Deep Space Nine." And I'm thinking, I don't know what character could she have been. Remember her. Must not have been an episode I was in a lot. I mean, and quite honestly, I wasn't on the bridge that often. But so when I watched it a couple of nights ago, it's like, oh my goodness, there she is. I was so happy to see her.
There she is.
But even all on her own, she is incredibly kind, and you could self-assured she has this way about her that you can tell she's in her autonomy, and she's just very real and straightforward.
We love her.
So much style.
We do love her.
Absolutely. Really nice person. Yeah.
When you do get the chance to watch some Voyager episodes, you'll see that she is a fan favorite on Voyager, the character Seska.
Oh, I'm sure. No surprise.
Oh my God. So good. So good.
I thought she was great as the Romulan in this.
She was.
She was great.
She did a great job. Kenneth Marshall was born in 1950, Robbie. So he's about 14 years older than you. So he would have been there.
74 years old. Yeah. Yeah.
So he would have been there at Juilliard well over a decade before you got there.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Wow. All right. Story. Cool. Story by Ira Stephen Baer and Robert Hewitt Wolf. Teleplay, though, by Ronald D. Moore and directed by none other than Kim Friedman.
Ron Moore's awesome. And Kim Friedman, she did the season finale. And now she's doing the season premiere, right?
That's so rare. Wouldn't you say, Robbie? Come on.
That's a big deal. She must have been, at the top of their lists at this point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so too.
And this was the first episode where Jonathan West took over from Rush, right?
That's right. Marvin came
over. Yep. Let the party begin.
Marvin came over to us. And then Jonathan began with you guys. And I do have Jonathan's phone number, by the way, Robbie. So if we ever want Jonathan as a guest, we can go to him.
Oh, great. I have his phone number too.
Do you really?
I don't have his phone number.
You're the only one that doesn't have it, Robbie. Yeah. Only Tara Fairbairn.
He hasn't had the chance to get it.
Okay, fine.
You're right. You just haven't had the chance to get it yet.
Yes. Thank you.
He's lovely. It would be so great to have him on.
Definitely.
Ooh, maybe. Well, this is too far down the line, but he directed Trials and Tribulations.
Yes, that's right. He directed a couple episodes, right? A few episodes.
And Chris Crossgrove was our DP on that. So we a lot of people switch places on Trials and Tribulations.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I don't mean that we shouldn't have him before then, but that was a good,
That's a great one.
Yeah. A lot of things happen here in terms of costume. Renee really loved his costume. His Odo costume from that Mirror Universe episode crossover, so that he had the wardrobe department make that his costume from this point forward.
Really?
So, yeah, he really loved it.
He loved it so much, he convinced them to make it his permanent costume.
Exactly.
Wow.
You can also see that Sisko has shaved his hair very short in this opener.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very, Dax gets a new hairstyle entirely.
She cut my bangs.
Yeah.
When I was on hold for the commercial.
Is that why it changed? Because
I don't think that's why, but it definitely, I felt at 4:30 in the morning, I didn't have a lot of room to argue.
Oh, wow.
Because my, And when I see it on film right now, you didn't need to cut my bangs for that.
No, you didn't. No.
It's a really complex hairstyle, I think. There's a lot going on. It looks way more complex than what they gave you before. So did it take a lot longer?
Not fun to sit through. Yes.
So it took longer, didn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it does not last long, I'm telling you right now.
Oh, really?
Not because I didn't. I'm one of those people that after a while you kind of go, you know what? That's your department, not mine. Unless it's something that's really going to give me a headache or something, I'm not going to. I need to have some input on the character that isn't just mine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wardrobe, hair, makeup. There's certain things to certain degrees, whether you're comfortable or not, but you have to know that you're not the only person contributing to this. At least that's how, especially in a Star Trek show, you know, a franchise where they've already set a precedent for a look or kind of rules in space, like you can't have highlights, right? That kind of thing.
That's the first thing I did when we finished.
My bangs. What?
When we finished Voyager, the first thing I did was bleach the tips of my hair, like surfer style. I just went like bleached blonde. It was kind of trendy back then a little bit too.
Yeah. And then I let my hair grow long.
And you and let then, your hair grow long.
You did.
Cut it. Yeah. And then I put color in there like Robbie did too. I did that too.
Yeah.
So what did you do when you left the show? Did you do a big change? Did you?
No, but I wasn't wearing the 3/4 fall.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was nice not to have that in my head. There was one point though on Becker where I was doing a TV movie over the summer and I let them cut my hair. And as they were doing it, I was thinking, Dave Hackle's going to be so mad at me because he said, if any of you cut your hair, please let me know ahead of time so we can make an episode about it. But I was doing a different TV movie and it was kind of one of those, you know, when you feel like you're between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Is it the, yeah. So.
Well,
I think that's why in they the notes, hired me, but I didn't think it helped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the notes, Terry, this yes. hairstyle is only in these two episodes, and it goes back to what's similar
is that
to
true?
Season one. Is that right?
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
You're right.
Here's a weird fact. This is the first appearance of the wardroom ever. The wardroom.
I liked having that.
I didn't know that.
Hmm. Which was the wardroom? Which one was
that's
that?
Where we're all sitting around the table instead of us
like a
being in
room.
A circle in ops.
Got it.
Which makes more sense because there's a little more privacy.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ops is very public for sure. So,
yeah.
Okay. Can I just say, besides all of this, this is the episode where when we open, Nana's at the head of the table talking to all of us, addressing us, right?
Yeah.
Did anybody else kind of think, where is Captain Sisko?
Yes.
That's what I thought. I thought, oh my God, what
it was
happened?
Bizarre.
In my mind, I was just like, what happened last episode? I'm trying to remember.
It's very strange. I literally in my notes wrote down the whole team minus Sisko are trying to figure out how to defend against the Jem'Hadar. Why is Sisko not there? We're going to discover in a minute why he's not there.
We figure it out later, but still, it's a little shocking.
It is a little shocking.
Yeah. Well, let's dive in. So they're in ops. Kira's at the table, kind of looks like she's leading this meeting to try to figure out how to defend against the Jem'Hadar. They talk about simulations. Every simulation they run shows the base getting overrun within a couple of hours.
Mm-hmm.
By the Jem'Hadar.
The Jem'Hadar. They can't figure out what they will possibly do when suddenly there's an alert. They get an unknown energy signature heading right towards them. They think it's trouble, so they go to red alert, and it's Sisko in the Defiant. So we're introduced to this new surprise he's brought back for the Dominion, the Defiant.
Evidently, later in the episode, I think they talk about a timeline of him going back for, he's been gone for a while. He's been debriefing them.
For weeks.
So for weeks, maybe 6-7 weeks, and now he shows back up with the Defiant. So
I think the writers were thinking about the fact that they were over hiatus, but they're still working the whole time. So,
yes,
you know what I mean? So Sisko's on Earth working, they're at Paramount working, and we're off doing TV movies or whatever else we're doing for the summer.
Exactly.
Got it. All right.
And we cut inside the wardroom.
Ooh.
Their briefing room, I guess.
They get a briefing room.
Observation lounge or something. Mm-hmm. He's describing this new ship. It's the most powerful warship Starfleet can possibly make, but it's a prototype. And the key to the whole thing is this cloaking device, this Romulan cloaking device that's experimental and very secret. And I think this is where he says our mission's to go to the Gamma Quadrant. We're going to find the founders, tell them that we are not a threat to them, that we're peaceful.
Right. But the Defiant itself was developed as a ship to combat the Borg. So it was supposed that's the sole purpose of its development, to deal with the Borg threat. But then they talk about the Borg threat becoming less urgent. And then there were some design flaws where they were testing the Defiant when they were taking it at top speeds. The ship would practically, because it has so many armaments on it, that it was kind of falling apart and they were coming apart at the seams. So there's some design flaws that they had to deal with. And so this is basically a, what do you call it when it's a concept, like a concept car? It's
yeah,
like a concept,
like a concept car.
Concept ship is what it is. It's a prototype. Excuse me. That's the word I was looking for. It's a prototype of what they wanted to have a whole fleet of these, basically.
But does
it's not made for speed. It's made for
secrecy.
Defense.
Defense.
Yeah.
But doesn't it seem crazy if their mission is to go tell the founders we're a peaceful people, but they're taking the most advanced warship? It seems a little
because we have to go through the Jem'Hadar and the Dominion to get to the founders, right?
That's true. That's true.
And also, Sisko does say that he wants to be able to have something to show the Dominion that we mean business as well, even though we're trying to go for peace. So, which is very understandable. It's something that.
Well, and we've been attacked. He was attacked.
Of
course. He was taken, and that doesn't really bode well for making friends.
No, but what I want to bring up one point, though. This is the first time in Star Trek that we see a ship that's been developed purely for combat only, whereas in Star Wars, almost every ship you see is a combat ship. So this is the sort of Star Trek's dabbling into the Star Wars world for the very first time.
Yeah, because usually a Star Trek ship has families, it's there for science, it's got some
exploration
defenses, but it's mostly for exploration.
This is stripped down.
Wow.
I think it looks super cool.
It does.
Super cool. It's
really nice.
Martha Hackett's in this scene. We get to meet her. She's a Romulan named Tarul. We've got a Starfleet security officer.
She is no nonsense.
Yeah.
No nonsense.
Yeah. Don't mess with Tarul, Subcommander Tarul.
We learn that the Romulans are loaning this cloaking device. We meet Michael Eddington, the security. Very awkward meeting between him and Odo in this scene.
He probably should have gone for Odo first, but he was too busy flirting with Kira.
Yes.
Exactly. To think of Odo first. So his bad.
Yes.
But this scene, this whole thing with Eddington coming in is identical to George Prim. Remember that guy that came in? And do you remember what happened right after that? Odo was offended, thinking that Prim was going to take over his position, and he was giving his resignation to Sisko in that episode.
He's very sensitive, Odo.
He is a sensitive man.
At the end of this scene, Odo storms out.
Well, he thinks he's been replaced.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
He's very insulted. Sisko follows him out into the hallway. Odo thinks he's going to have to report to Eddington, the new Starfleet guy. And Sisko does admit that, you know, you've been reluctant to follow some of Starfleet's protocols. And that's why Starfleet has brought in this new guy. And Odo says, fine, I'll resign.
But Sisko does go to bat for him. He says, I strongly disagreed with these orders because this wasn't his idea. He says he tried to do everything he could to fight for Odo, but Starfleet would not have that. And so this is really above his pay grade in a way. Yeah. And he also wants Odo to know that this is not a racial issue. It's not because you're a shapeshifter.
And knowing where this episode's going, this is a very smart scene for the writers to create to kind of make Odo feel like he doesn't belong.
Right.
Just to remind everybody, Odo doesn't feel like he belongs, like he's not respected. So when he is drawn to this home world kind of thing, it's much more meaningful. So very smart, I think. Mm-hmm. Going to Sisko's quarters, Jake is really enjoying some spice pudding.
Adanian spice pudding. What did that look like to both of you when you were looking at that?
I don't know.
When he first took a bite, I thought it was oatmeal.
Yeah, that's my first thought. Then I thought maybe grits. It kind of looked like grits to me, oatmeal, one of the two. But
or tapioca pudding or rice pudding.
Yeah, maybe rice pudding.
It had texture.
Yeah.
So when he said pudding, then I thought, oh, well, it must have been rice pudding.
Right, with a little clumpiness
in there. Or tapioca.
Yeah.
Well, cinnamon sugar.
Okay.
Sounds delicious.
Does sound good.
Can we just go have a snack right now?
I think we need to have some.
I have a really good rice pudding recipe. Old fashioned with tons of fat, butter, vanilla.
Terry's got some good recipes. I just ordered her book.
Terry, why aren't you
the apple pie book?
That one I made for my dad and a friend of mine, a fellow quilter in Pennsylvania, Susie Epler, gave me the recipe and I made it for my dad and I was like, this tastes like your mom's rice pudding. And he tasted it, he was like, it does. Oh my God. So I'm like, I have it the on family. The original piece of paper that she wrote it on it for me. And yeah, it means a lot to me. I miss cooking a lot. I cooked a lot when I was married to Brian.
Did they ever talk about putting your love of cooking into the show? Like the Dax would, that would have been a cool hobby for her.
I think at that time, Nana was sort of like, you know, it was that Nana was the cook, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She has the French mom. She makes really exotic and interesting things. She's a baker. She's
really
Nana's really a talented.
But so I would
are
say
you. More than a cook, a chef.
Right.
You've got great recipes.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. She's very generous with me too about complimenting me. So I don't feel slighted in any way.
Well, am I right to say that you have enough recipes that you could have your own cookbook?
Yes, there you go.
Dax maybe, does but they're food? Not just all mine. So I don't know how you do make your own cookbook if
there are other people's recipes.
Yeah, because
well, you can credit them. You can credit them in your book saying this was from my, you know, true. From my Nana.
Or ask
this is
them.
From yeah, or to ask them.
Because changing too. One ingredient or adding one
that's not the same, is it?
It's not enough.
It's not the same.
No, it's not. So
as we see in this scene, because Jake didn't like the pudding when he was back on Earth. He wanted the pudding out of this replicator on DS9. Yeah.
But it's still Idanian pudding. Spice pudding.
Right. Spice pudding. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Jake's super happy to be home. Sisko asks in the scene, you know, when did DS9 become our home? They both sort of are realizing that this feels like home now. They've been here a couple of years. And Jake mentions, I think, in the scene where when they were back on Earth, when Sisko took his treasured belongings out of storage to bring here, that was a sign to Jake that this was home now. Sisko holds up the African mask, the very treasured African mask on the wall. It's a
2,000 years old mask.
2,000 year old Yoruba mask, I think.
Here's a quick note here. A couple of the story points in this episode were written into the episode due to a season-long campaign to make the DS9 main characters more of a family. Even in The Search, we were trying to get that feeling, commented Ron Moore. Sisko comes back to the station and Jake says to him, DS9 is becoming home. And Quark is showing that he actually cares about what happens to these people when he says goodbye as they go off to the Gamma Quadrant and the Defiant. So there's a conscious effort by the writers to give this idea of home. Okay, so next up, we're in the promenade and we have a scene with Odo and Kira. Kira comes up to Odo and says, hey, guess what? I just talked to the provisional government and they want you to go as the Bajoran representative to the Gamma Quadrant. After a few more lines of dialogue, we basically find that Odo feels that she's making all of this up to make him feel better. Exactly. And Kira's like, well, yeah, maybe, but you know what? I'm your friend, okay? So I'm just trying to make sure that you understand that, you know, some idiot Starfleet admiral making that decision.
Yes.
She's a great friend to him in this episode.
It's a great scene.
She really is.
Yeah. It's needed.
And she does say, all right, you decide. We're going to leave at 700 hours.
Yeah, so. she leaves it out there for him. So she's not strong-arming him, but she really comes
she's
out
a good
and
friend.
Says, yeah, she goes, I'm a friend. Yeah. I'm a friend. I'm doing this to help you. And I think he appreciates it, but I think he's too proud at this point still to say, I'm coming along, right?
I like that he's staring out at the stars.
Yes.
You know, it's a very, because the camera, I think, started down below on the busy promenade and tilted up just to see little lonely Odo up there just looking out at the stars. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was
the
nice
camera was where that front staircase was to the promenade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So next up, we're in the commander's office, and we have a nice scene with Sisko asking Quark to join them on this mission. Quark refuses right off the bat. He doesn't want to deal with it, and he's a little confused. He doesn't understand even why he's being asked, but Sisko's angle is Quark has already been to the Gamma Quadrant. He's already dealt with an alien race, the Karma, in terms of getting the tulipberry wine for the Ferengi. Mm-hmm. So the goal is, go to the Karma, use Quark to sort of get information from the Karma representative of who and where the founders are. Because the whole goal, once again, is to show them that the Federation only wants peace. We don't want any We have zero expansionist intentions, even though a Bajoran colony on the other side is quite expansionist, I think. So, but he's saying Federation is not going to do anything like that.
But I like how Quark, to try to get out of this, says, I didn't negotiate that. Nog did.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know,
he's only got a kid.
Oh, sorry.
Rom.
Rom, and he only has a kid. I have a business.
Yes, that was very funny.
The way he's Rom only has a son to think about. I have a business. So basically, yes. A son is nothing, but a business is very meaningful. Shit. That's what
so Ferengi of him.
It's so Ferengi. It's very funny. But of course, Sisko is already prepared for this because this is when he pulls out the Grand Negus's staff with the little gold.
How did he get that? That seems like
the Grand Negus gave it to him.
He gave it to him because on his way, he went to Earth, right, to debrief everybody about everything that happened. And on his way to Earth, he passed by Fringinar, obviously. Yeah.
It was way back to Deep Space Nine. Yes.
So he talked to the Grand Negus himself in person, and the Grand Negus agreed with everything. And of course, Sisko probably said to the Grand Negus, he's not going to believe me. And he's like, well, then take my staff. I'm sure he'll believe you now. So that's the whole reason why he has it.
Quark agreed to it before Sisko shows him the staff.
Does he?
Yes. But then he says to him, are you forgetting something? Because that is like, that's what seals the deal. Because if he didn't kiss the staff of the Grand Negus, then it would be like Quark might try to get out of it.
Oh, the kiss at the end is hilarious. Yeah. That 50-50 of, and you see him lean in and pause for a minute. It's very funny. Yeah, I love
that. Did you find it, Garrett?
I'm just trying to find. There's a quote from Armin in here that he hated that. He really hated that scene.
You could see it in his performance.
Yeah, here we go. Okay, here's a quote. Armin Shimerman hated the scene where Sisko makes Quark kiss the scepter of the Grand Negus. Despite the Federation's lip service to their prime directive, which says they're not supposed to apply their standards to any culture's attitudes, it seems to me that this was another example of the Federation making fun of, taking advantage of, and ridiculing the Ferengi way. So kissing the scepter was a bit irksome to both the actor and the character, was the quote from Armin.
Interesting.
And I honestly felt like I thought, like, Terry, you're saying that sealed the deal. I kind of felt like that the way that Sisko was kind of smiling while he was kissing it did seem a little, you know, like, haha, you got to do this. Yeah. And I almost felt like it was unnecessary. I almost feel like him telling him this is what the Grand Negus wants. Obviously, he wants it. I have the scepter was enough that they didn't have to have that sort of, you know, scene at the very end.
It did
end.
Feel like kind of
power play.
Yeah, power play. Like he was kind of laughing at him having to submit to this or something. Yeah.
So I feel Armin's pain. Wow. I do.
Interesting.
I
felt like it was in. Yeah, I wouldn't say the first time I saw it, my reaction was degrading.
Yes.
A little bit.
That's the point. It was.
And then the second time I watched it, I thought, well, I can't think about this too much.
Right. You let it go.
Yeah, because you get conditioned to go, you know, what could I do about it anyway?
And that's the rules.
It's already done.
Right. I mean, I think Sisko, on one hand, was kind of saying, this is the rules. When the Negus gives an order and you have to agree to it because it's a Negus order, you also have to, your kiss of the staff is your promise. Is sealing the deal.
That's you signing the contract of the orders that you have to do, right?
Yeah.
Sign
but
it with
I
a kiss.
I find it kind of humiliating every time we've seen the Grand Negus make him kiss the staff or anybody else in any situation otherwise too.
Yeah.
Because that kind of hierarchy is not how we grew up.
Right.
So anytime you're taking away someone's agency, that's
especially if they don't want
very upset. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, especially if you don't want it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next scene, I think, is in the wardroom. We see Sisko studying some maps when Dax enters and says the Defiant's almost ready. I love that you say Miles O'Brien has a maintenance list, of course, like a mile long. I forget what as long as the table or something.
Yeah.
Did it pass the chief's inspection? Does anything? His maintenance list is as long as this table. But he did say it'll take us where we're going.
Exactly. I love that. I love that dialogue done beautifully. Gosh. Sisko thinks that they have to try to reach out to the founders. And Dax says, Curzon always said, don't volunteer for anything.
Right.
Which I loved.
Yeah, yes. I love that too.
But Dax also notices that he's passionate about this. He volunteered because he really believes in it. And ever since Jennifer died, Dax hasn't seen that passion until mm-hmm. now.
Mm-hmm. So
that's a nice kind of observation of the last couple of seasons of Cisco sort of being ambivalent and, you know, sometimes about being there. And it does feel like this is a turn with Avery Brooks and Cisco, the character, kind of committing to, you know, a whole new kind of storyline in a way, I guess,
mm-hmm.
whole new mission.
Yeah.
And yeah, Dax says, you weren't meant to sit behind a desk. You're a man of action. You're meant to be out in the field.
And Curzon felt that too.
He romanticizes being a, what are they called? Admiral. The Admiral.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I love that moment between the two of them too.
Mm-hmm. Really nice scene. Really, really
Thank
good
you.
Scene.
Yeah. That was fun.
Yeah. Good character. Good relationship scene. Love it. We go to the bridge, I think, next.
Mm-hmm.
The bridge of the Defiant for the very first time. It's very small, this bridge, but it does feel like a bridge.
Well, mm-hmm. You know, you get the stations. It's bigger than a runabout. We know that. So
yes. Yes.
We all fit in the room.
Yeah.
And there is a captain's chair. So it feels, for the first time on DS9 at least, like we're mm-hmm. this is your version of a starship, you know, that we're familiar with. It's the DS9 version of the Enterprise or Voyager or whatever.
I wonder if that was a new set build or if it was a redress of something else. It was a new set build then? Entirely?
I believe so. Okay. I don't think there was anything left over from
something else.
I don't know. I could be wrong, but
I would guess
there's
it
so many people
so
we can't
specific.
Ask anymore.
I know. Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah.
Well, first time in this ship, Bashir's not happy with the medical arrangements.
But there is no medical data.
No,
there's
he says there's
medical.
no databases, not much there.
No.
I think he comments later on about like the medical beds are down in the
a
in
joke
the
of a sick bay
the,
or something like that.
Yes,
just
yes.
Yeah.
Tarul is there. Martha Hackett's there for mm-hmm. the cloaking device, I guess. That's because she's talking about engines, but you know, as they're going around to all the checks, you know, navigation operations ready, weapons ready. And then Martha Hackett says, impulse engines online, warp power available at your command. I thought she was just there for the...
Yeah, she's
but
she's
they
pretty...
need power.
They, I guess
they
so.
Do, but that's still not her job. Her job is to oversee the cloak. That's it. And
right?
then now she's doing... And again, she's Romulan. She's not supposed to have knowledge of Starfleet impulse.
It
and
seemed
warp
a little
power.
Strange to me that she was part of the team that's kind of checking in with all the departments.
Yeah. But maybe she got briefed beforehand, you know, so maybe she knows everything. So
yeah,
we don't know that.
Well, she must have come with Cisco though, right? Did she fly
did
in
she
with Cisco?
Did she come in
I don't
with Cisco?
I'm
know.
Curious. Maybe
that's very
did.
Possible. Yeah.
And
on the
with
Defiant,
Eddington
maybe.
As well.
Too. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly like the three of them.
They came together. Yeah. So he probably briefed her. So on the journey from the from the Alpha Quadrant or from Starfleet headquarters to DS9.
From San Francisco.
San Francisco. Plenty of time for Tarul to get the basics of how that Defiant works. Okay. That makes sense. I'll
and
buy that.
Terry, you are sitting in the pilot's chair. You're the pilot
at
of this
the
thing?
Helm. I
navigation
know.
And
like
operations.
Excited.
Oh, look, guess what? Dax says navigation and operations ready. Robbie is basically a pilot navigation. I was operations on Voyager. So you're us.
So you were like,
I had both of your jobs.
You're both of our jobs. Look at that.
Look what a Trill can do.
I know. You're incredible.
I was just excited when they said I was piloting the Defiant. I'm like, I'm the shit.
Yes, right? That's a cool job.
When
it's
Jadzia
a cool
Dax,
job.
When Jadzia Dax has a child, it's actually twins. It's Tom Paris and Harry Kim, because we come out.
Oh,
we're like your
you.
Kids.
We're like your kids.
So Dax is the pilot. Just as they're about to leave, though, Odo calls and he wants to come on board. And everybody looks to each other. Great, great moments of smiles all around the bridge. Everybody's happy about that.
Yeah.
Cisco does say, as soon as the docking clamps are released, cloak this thing.
Yeah.
Or as soon as they get
get
the
gamma
quadrant.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, you don't need a cloak until you get over there. So.
Yeah, but
we can get through the wormhole first without so much drama.
Yeah.
Hey, Garrett, remember when we did the language lesson on the podcast? I am so impressed with all these languages you know. How did you learn them all?
Well, to be honest, Rosetta Stone, I have used it to help learn Spanish, German, Russian, Polish. Rosetta Stone is the trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. Rosetta Stone has fast language acquisition, which means it immerses you in many ways. For instance, there are no English translations. So you really learn to speak, listen, and think in that language. Also, with their intuitive process, it allows you to pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences.
It sounds like it's designed for long-term retention.
It really is. The built-in true accent speech recognition gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent.
Wow. Rosetta Stone is also very convenient. It allows for flexible learning anytime, anywhere. You can learn on the go with the mobile app or at your desktop on your own schedule. And if you sign up today, you will get a lifetime access to all 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off.
What an amazing value. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. The Delta Flyers listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today.
That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. Today.
Spark something uncommon this holiday with just the right gift from Uncommon Goods. The busy holiday season is here, and Uncommon Goods makes it less stressful with incredible hand-picked gifts for everyone on your list. They scour the globe for original, handmade, absolutely remarkable things.
Garrett, I actually have been shopping at Uncommon Goods for years.
Really?
Yes, and I have this favorite piece. It's a bowl with half a bowl attached to it. It's all one piece, solid construction. I've had it over 10 years. I used to put like vegetables on one side and ranch dip on the other for Max when he was little. And now I use it for my chips and dip and for pistachios and shells. It's just remarkable. And it's been the best gift I've ever given.
Well, when you shop at Uncommon Goods, you're supporting artists and small independent businesses. Many of their handcrafted products are made in small batches. So shop now before they sell out this holiday season.
Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high in quality, unique, and often handmade. They even have gifts you can personalize.
Uncommon Goods has something for everyone, from book lovers to diehard sports fans.
And with every purchase you make at Uncommon Goods, they give back a dollar to a nonprofit partner of your choice. They've donated more than $3 million to date.
To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/TDF.
That's uncommongoods.com/TDF for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer.
Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Yes, we are.
We go out to space. We see the Defiant clearing the station for the first time. We see the cool lights coming on and kind of pivots around. So we get a whole, almost a 360 of the Defiant for the first time, which is very cool. Into the Gamma Quadrant they go. And the Defiant, as it comes out of the wormhole, I love that shot. It's sort of, as it's passing the camera and the camera's panning, it starts to cloak. So it just disappears into the Gamma Quadrant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Very cool.
And I like the ad of them turning, dimming the lights on the bridge too, so that we all know we are cloaked whenever the lights are dim.
Oh,
that's so kind of a nice added thing.
I did not notice that. So there's a light change when they cloak as well.
Yeah, there is. Cool. I think that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Sense. We cut down to the cabins, I guess, the bunk rooms for the first time we see on the Defiant. There's no big quarters on this thing. They're just bunk rooms.
Bunk bed.
And, yeah, bunk beds. Quark is in the bottom bunk in this tiny room. It's the door opens. Odo comes in. Quark is so happy to see him. Does he bump his head in the scene?
He does.
Yes. He does. Right? Yeah. He does, getting out of the bed.
Yeah.
Poor Quark. I mean, you're even on the bottom bunk and you're still hitting your head.
Yeah.
And your Quark, how tall is he?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
As a small bed.
Not a slam, but I mean, you'd expect me to hit my head getting out of there.
Yes. Yes.
But it's even small for him, for Quark.
Yes.
Even for the vertically challenged Quark, it was still small for him. But Bashir's there too. Bashir's the one that escorts Odo over there. And Bashir's kind of mean to Quark over in the beginning. He says, yes, we don't feel a bit better with someone here to watch over Quark. And then Quark's like, I take that as a personal insult, doctor. And Bashir says, you should. It's like more Quark bashing.
No respect. Showed us a history of some pretty bad behavior.
We understand.
Yes. I mean, technically, he should probably be in jail for some of the
stuff, for sure.
Yes, or prison.
But if you're not going to put him in jail.
Jail sounds nicer than prison, but probably prison.
Probably prison.
Yeah.
Serving multiple sentences.
Oh, gosh.
Well, Odo comes in. Quark is a chatterbox in this scene.
He is.
I love this scene. He's just talking away.
Yeah.
Odo's completely silent. Then he growls at Quark at one point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He really wants whatever that growling thing he does.
Well, I mean, it's warranted. I mean, he does tell Quark, I've been holding this shape for the last 16 hours. It's time for me to revert back to my liquid state. And Quark is just still not even giving him the privacy. So the growl happens right there.
Well, he's trying to turn around, right? And I know this is a private moment, but then he starts to have another conversation again. Yes. Like, oh,
another one.
Word. Yeah. Like, I'm sorry, you said to stop talking.
Exactly.
Even though Odo is so grumpy in the scene, you can see that Quark and Odo's friendship is starting to build. Like, even though Odo's really mad, Quark wouldn't be talking like this in such a chatterbox if he didn't feel like this was a friend.
Right.
So, you're seeing two friends, one of them super grumpy, but that friendship is there somewhere.
And it's this moment in a friendship where trust is being built by we're being forced to be a little more intimate than we're kind of ready to go, but we have to be, and we have to respect our boundaries. And so this is what they're up against right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of a great thing.
Yeah, we're back up on the bridge. And Odo, by the way, goes in his bucket. He does.
Yes.
Dive eventually.
Much to all of our relief.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Take a nap.
Stop complaining.
Yeah.
Before we jump into your bridge description, Robbie, I just want to talk about this, the introduction of the two recurring characters. The DS9 writing staff's attempt to introduce in this installment, two new recurring characters paid off with mixed results. After this episode's two-parter, the DS9 producers realized that the T'Rul character would not offer enough story material to warrant keeping her around. Poor Martha. However, Eddington did proceed to recur as the series continued, and according to Ron Moore, the DS9 writers decided over the course of the third season to expand his character. So he gets a lot more screen time, and clearly, Martha Hackett does not show up again after this, is what I'm guessing. So this is it for her.
Well, when you only give her the cloak to deal with.
Yes, yes. That's
exactly. Then, she showed us, then we buy it, then we say bye-bye.
Yeah.
Unless you got, and her personality, they didn't help out by giving her a winning personality.
No,
or being so mean that you're like, perfect antagonist.
Yes.
But what? She's on our side.
Right.
Yes, exactly. She's supposed to be one of us, but she doesn't feel like it.
No, we don't need her.
And we've got one grumpy guy in Odo.
We love Martha.
Yeah, we love Martha.
Here's another random cool tidbit. This was the first of 11 DS9 episodes, the last being Past Tense Part 1, that premiered without another Star Trek series also on the air. So there's the 11 episodes that you guys
that
get
you guys
all
are
alone,
the only,
where there's no one else, and then
a
Voyager
different
pops
time
in.
When nobody knows where we are.
Yeah,
it's true. That happened to us eventually with the UPN, crumbling of the network that we were on.
Well, now it's officially gone, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Where we pick up Jem'Hadar ships on scanners?
Yes, we do.
And he decides to test the cloaking device. Sisko does. And you know what? This was kind of nerve-wracking for me. How about you guys?
Yes, very. Yeah, because you don't know if it's going to
work. No clue.
No, right? And there were two ships. And as they were coming by and they passed us, then they stopped. Mm-hmm. Yes. And then who was it O'Brien that was saying something about our signature being different or there being a lot more electricity because of the demands of the Defiant?
Yeah.
Maybe something like that.
He said because the Defiant is as large of a vessel it is, it's giving off a lot of energy. The cloak may not cover all of it. So that's when he suggests maybe we should cut some power. And that's when Sisko goes, cut off the main power right now. Yeah.
Right. That they're leaving it some kind of signature.
I think Tyrul first says cut the warp, right? Because it might leak some subspace variants.
Right.
So they drop out of warp and that seems to work, but they keep sniffing around. And then that's when I think O'Brien says something about the maybe the power. They're picking up some subspace variants in power or something.
The Defiant's power signature is unusually high for a ship this size. The cloaking device may not mask everything, cut main power, which then immediately made me think of every submarine movie I've ever seen when they're like, oh my gosh, they're above us.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
So everyone
cut the engines
and everything and don't even say a word. Don't, because they're listening.
Nobody
with sonar. Yeah, no one say a word. And that's what they did. They turned everything off.
That's a good analogy, the submarine thing.
Thank
yeah.
You.
Totally.
Yeah, I'm holding my breath just now as we speak.
I know.
Right? It's terrifying, but it works. They turn off the power, they drop out of warp, they sit really silent, and then
they hover over us for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
very cool.
They left
idea.
Us hanging for a while so that we felt like, oh, what's going to happen?
Yeah, they milk this moment for sure.
They do. And then they finally leave. We all breathe.
Yep.
A sigh of relief. And by the way,
huge.
Can I just throw this in here? The name Defiant. Did you guys know that Ron Moore was in charge of naming what this vessel was going to be?
No.
And it was not Defiant. He didn't want Defiant. He wanted the Valiant. The Valiant. But because Valiant begins with V and USS Voyager begins with V, the producer said, no, you can't name it Valiant, Ron Moore. You have to name it something different. And so he said, Defiant. And that's what they went with. So it was supposed
to be. Well, Defiant starts with a D, like DS9.
I don't think that's how they.
Maybe.
But yeah, you're
no,
right.
No, but look, that's kind of the same thing when they wouldn't let Avery shave his head in the beginning because Captain Picard was bald. It's like,
oh, right.
What? It's, like it, there's only.
I know. It's
only one,
bald
one bald
person
captain
in our
in
universe.
Starfleet. Yeah.
It's the same ridiculous reasoning that means nothing, right? You could have definitely named it exactly. So they use
Valiant
Defiant
Voyager.
I know they use Defiant because it's an original series episode, the Tholian Web, that has the USS Defiant. So they copied that one.
That's
what they
cool.
did. Yeah.
Well, we see the Defiant uncloaked now, flying through space. We have a ship's log, stardate 48212.4. We've arrived at the Karema homeworld. And opened talks with one of Quark's business partners in an effort to contact the founders of the Dominion. And then we cut inside and there's John Fleck. I love his performance in this. It's almost like he's smelling for things that are valuable. It's like,
did he play the character that had that extra piece of skin? Do you remember that episode where it went, the skin like went from his lower lip to the tip of his nose?
You're talking about the guy that tried to kill Quark that showed up?
Yes.
He had that skin right there? Yeah. Same skinny face, but not the same actor, though.
Not the same
actor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. One other fact before we go on with the scene. Going back to the earlier scene, when the ships take off and we all breathe a sigh of relief, the Jem'Hadar ships, Kira says, quote, they've gone into warp and resumed their original course. There's a couple times in this episode where they've used grammatical or words that we didn't use in Voyager because we would have said they've gone to warp, T-O.
Gone
we wouldn't
into
say
warp.
Into
yeah.
warp like that. So it's a different way of saying
different way of saying it
entirely.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I found very, very interesting and different. So
like when I get on the freeway, I merge onto the freeway, I go into 55 miles an hour.
Stop. You do not.
Okay.
Maybe not.
So.
Okay. So we're on the bridge. the Karema guy.
The Karema.
Orenthar is his name, I think. He's
Orenthar.
Studying every detail of the bridge. He's looking for things of value. He's sniffing. Quark offers to increase the Tulaberry wine shipments if they will help them contact the founders.
Yep.
Orenthar refuses, although...
Well,
he
it was
like,
3%. He was
3%.
He
wasn't offering very much.
Not much.
No, that's
but
nothing.
But John Fleck did like Kira's earring. He liked that a lot. He sniffed it. Maybe he just liked the way Kira
smelled.
He makes
an offer. He makes an offer on purchasing it, to which Quark agrees. He's like, sold, like that. It was very funny. It's like, how could you sell someone else's personal property? I don't think so.
No. Orenthar does say the only contact that they have with the founders is through the Vorta.
Right.
And they just do what they're told. They don't ask any questions. And this is where Quark says, you know, we're going to stop buying Tulaberry wine from you if you don't help us. So he's trying. Quark is trying.
Yeah.
And Sisko says, well, the Vorta might be mad about that. So Orenthard shows them on a chart where they direct the messages to the Vorta. This is where we send our messages. After that, we don't know what happens. We don't know where the messages go. It's right. a relay station.
And yeah. It goes up on the main screen of the Defiant. Yep. So everybody in the room can see it. Right. Just thought it was important to say for those people who are just listening. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why is that important, Terry? Tell us.
Because Odo points to a planet and said, what is this? Mm-hmm. And Orenthar says it's the Omarion Nebula. Omarion Nebula. Yeah.
But Odo is like
fascinated,
laser focused on this.
Yeah, totally locked in.
Odo is so preoccupied. He's not paying attention to anybody, no. It seems. Just his one thing, yes.
Quark says
he's showing his narcissistic personality right now.
He says, okay, I gotta go home.
I'm going.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get a ride home. Good luck. But he is kind of, there's a moment I felt like when Quark turns back, Sisko says, all right, Quark, good luck. And Quark sort of stopped and he looked at him because of the last episode where Quark and Sisko were trapped together. I felt like their relationship got a little better. And I felt the actors tracking that into that moment.
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Yeah.
Yeah. It didn't track when he made him kiss the head of the.
No, it didn't.
No, that did not track. Mm-mm. You're right.
No. Yeah, because that might have been kind of cool if, because of the last episode of the second season, if Sisko would have said, now you know you're supposed to kiss this, but I'm not going to make
exactly,
you. Exactly. See
Terry.
You. Yeah, there you go.
That would have been
perfect.
Nice.
Perfect. Now you know you're supposed to kiss. See, you're a writer, Terry. That would have been perfect. I would have bought that. Way more Absolutely. Than I bought the ending of that last scene with that weird smirky smirk that he's giving him too. It's like, no, what happened to your bond that you just had in the last episode? There's a new friendship happening.
I'm just going to focus on this moment, which felt nice. This nice goodbye where Sisko says good luck and Quark says same to you. That felt like a nice moment.
Yeah.
I'm going to forget about the Negus head.
Yeah.
We go into Sisko's cabin in the...
Wait, he says, lay in a course for the Kalanon?
Kalanon system.
Kalanon system. And I say, aye, sir.
And you pilot. Yes. Go pilots.
Is that the first time you actually pilot a vessel? Is that right?
No, she's
pilot. I piloted
the runabout.
Yeah, runabout. But this is
my
your first time.
My fifth incarnation was a test pilot.
Oh.
Did you?
That's where that comes from.
Got it.
What was that other, like... That messed up ship that you and Kira got into. Did you pilot that thing or did she pilot?
I think she piloted it. I was in the back.
The one that had shutters? That one?
Yeah, yes. That was cool looking though, wasn't it? It was some broken down.
It was a broken Bajoran first generation fighter ship. Yes. That
hiding
one?
In a cave for us.
Yes. So, hiding in a cave.
That was awesome, actually. That was funny. I love that scene.
We do see Sisko's cabin on the Defiant here, and it's also a bunk. Captains don't get any special treatment here. He's in a bunk. Kira comes in. She's worried about Odo. So is Sisko. Sisko says, you know, Odo's got to be a team player. He's got to follow the chain of command and the rules. And Kira defends him, says he always gets the job done. So they're talking about their thoughts about Odo, but then the bridge calls to rule. Our friend Martha Hackett calls and says, we've reached the Kalanon system.
Side note, Rick Berman was initially against the idea of the ship having a cloaking device because one of the tenets of Gene Roddenberry's universe was that Starfleet did not believe in sneaking around. However, it was Ira Stephen Bear and Robert Wolf that managed to convince Berman that the Defiant was a unique ship in a unique situation and with the added stipulation that the cloak could only be used in the Gamma Quadrant. So Rick... basically said no, and then they were able to...
They had to talk him into it.
Well, it's amazing, because you and I both know that that's very difficult to convince him otherwise. So
So
good job.
True.
To those two.
Yeah. And give a little kudos to Rick for giving in a little.
Yes, most definitely.
Absolutely.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're in the Kalanon system. We got a space shot. I love this planet, by the way. This it was kind of a I don't know. I just thought it was a cool planet. It was yellow or something, or gold. It was.
Yeah,
A,
you're talking about the planet where the relay
the count.
station is, right?
Yeah, where the relay station is. Yeah. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's different.
But yeah, Defiance cloaked up. They go into standard orbit around the Kalanon 7. And Sisko's going to send Dax and O'Brien down to survey the relay station on the surface. How could they send their pilot? You know, pilots are very important, Terry.
Well,
you should never give up your pilot.
And I understand.
Well, I felt
but
the reason
I have
why
to do what the captain said.
You do. I had
or
to do
it
too.
Is he still a commander? Is he not a captain yet?
He's
not
be
a
captain.
Captain. He's still Commander Sisko. Yeah. But I will say, when they
he's
sent
my
you
captain.
Down, my first thought was they sent Dax down because Dax will bring something very large back up to the ship like she normally does. Like, we're going to take this entire monolith.
Oh,
this
yes.
Huge statue. We'll go back
Scott
to the station for us. And
she
I
likes
assume
to
that's
take
what it
people,
was.
Yes. Yes. Treasured, you know, monuments and just steal them.
Yes. She
that's
just
very much like me.
But just to do more, you know, surveys on and to do more tests on. That's so she's being the science officer.
Yes.
But in a way that no other science officer that I know just takes the entire thing with them. Like, it's mine.
I have a lot of male ego in there running.
Yes.
Really?
So back on the bridge, they're scanning this relay station. They do realize it's unmanned. Very little security. Sisko says it'll take 6 seconds to beam them down.
Right.
So we can decloak for only 6 seconds. So
mm-hmm.
they decloak, beam them down, and then go back into the cloak, which I thought was pretty cool. Cloak is
One
re-engaged.
Mississippi, two Mississippi.
I actually counted, and she hit the buttons faster than 6 seconds. So I was like,
really?
Wait a minute. What?
TV seconds.
Yeah.
TV seconds, Gawa.
TV seconds. Yeah. It was six TV seconds. Thank you.
Well, they're back cloaked, and we cut down to the outpost there, and they're in Dax and O'Brien are in the relay station. Miles gets into the directory very easily.
Not good.
No?
No.
That should be right away. Turn around and go back.
Yes. Leave now.
They Warning. Know we're there. Oh my God.
He's in the directory. He says it doesn't look like we've been scanned. Everything seems to be going great.
Yeah.
Back on the bridge, Sisko comments on the replicators. The coffee stinks. And then he gets a call from Dax.
Mm-hmm.
Dax says they've accessed the communication logs of all the outgoing transmissions. O'Brien says most of them are sent to one place. They send the coordinates to the Defiant, and suddenly lights go out. And that hand on your shoulder in that
oh
cut.
Oh, God.
Right.
Freaked me out.
So creepy.
At first, I didn't even notice it. Like subliminally, I was
not
like,
as much as it freaked me out.
Oh.
It was literally, and just showing the hand and nothing else. All you could think it was Thing from the Addams Family that was just right there on your
oh
shoulder.
Oh, my God. 100%.
Like, yeah. Yeah. It was very creepy.
Well, at least I was stuck with Colm.
Yes. See,
that's
two of
true.
You get
my
to get
favorite person
out.
To be abandoned with.
Yeah.
Oh, well, at least I know I'll laugh.
Well, on the bridge, they've lost contact with you. They can't get through the shields of this relay station. Now it's completely shielded.
Yeah.
And they see three Jem'Hadar ships are heading their way.
Yeah.
Sisko wants to maybe phaser through the shields, but T'Rell says they'll have to decloak. And T'Rell's like, let's get out of here. Leave them. Who cares about them? We got to get out of here.
Bashir does. Bashir cares.
Bashir cares.
Oh,
yes.
And poor our man Bashir.
Oh my gosh.
Right.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
sweetheart, yeah. His unrequited love and his best friend.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
Sisko says, prepare to leave orbit, Major. And the look that Bashir gives to Sisko when he says, Commander, is just, you can just see. It's like, no, we do not leave my unrequited love interest and my best buddy unrequited.
No, I don't mind, but you often, you know, we rely on you to double check us, so I know you wouldn't want to hear that back.
Exactly. So thank you. Unrequited love.
Yes. Well, they head out. Sisko does decide you know, the greater good is to get out of here and sacrifice.
Well, and he trusts us.
Yes.
Yeah.
He did. He does.
I also think Avery's when you're looking at his expression, he is also playing underneath that he doesn't want to leave him either.
I think no,
he doesn't.
He did a good job.
But what can he do?
He can't.
You're right. It's the greater good, because you can't all get, if you all get killed by the Jem'Hadar, you can't come save us either.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. But he also feels like you're good enough with all of your lifetime worth of experiences to get out of any gnarly situation.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. So he's
and he knows me.
Yes.
Well,
and he knows that. Yeah, we'll do what we can.
Right.
Yep. We come back from this break and he says that. He says, I trust that she's going to try to contact the founder. She's mm-hmm. not going to just sit there and do nothing.
Right.
Sisko calls Odo at this point, and Odo says he's indisposed.
Oh, and he's so rude about it too.
Yes. Yes, Odo.
Is he rude or is he just preoccupied?
Well, here's the thing. Didn't he say he was going to give his resignation? He's coming on this ride, right? So did he give his resignation or is he still part of security? Because if he's still working security, he's being inappropriate.
Yeah, right. He says, please find someone else to do that job.
But he's now a civilian who's like, already
please
quit.
Was like,
yeah.
Please find someone else to do that. Yeah. He was mad.
That's a pretty good Odo,
He's
Robbie.
Very grumpy Odo.
Yeah. He needs a Snickers bar.
He does. And Sisko says, you know what? Maybe I should go talk to him. And Kira says, no, let me go talk to him. Mm-hmm. More Kira Odo bonding. And then they also pick up three more ships headed their way. So they stop. You know, Sisko says, bring us out of warp, cut main power. We'll wait here. So they think what they did before is going to work, right? And Kira goes down to talk to Odo. Odo's studying star charts, obsessed. He's obsessed with these star charts.
Mm-hmm. Obsessed.
Right? He's obsessed.
Oh my God.
How about this? He's mesmerized. He's completely.
He's lost all sense of reality.
I don't think he cares about anything at this point, but that place to go to. That's it.
He says he's looking at the Ormarian Nebula and he's been pulled there. He's been drawn to this ever since they got in the Gamma Quadrant. And Kira says, maybe we'll look into this after we meet the founders. That's why we're here. And Odo's, he's like, no, now.
Yeah.
Like a 4-year-old temper tantrum.
Yes.
Really? I feel like I was in the grocery store. I don't remember what his age was. I can't remember if it was 3 or 4, but he couldn't get his way. And I just left the entire cart. Yep. I left the entire cart.
Really?
I said, okay, we're going home now. And it was my regular grocery store. So I said to somebody on my way out, I said, I'm so sorry, but I have no choice. He
Good
didn't do
you.
It. I mean, there were only a couple times he had tantrums and they were both met with calm and leaving wherever we were at.
Oh man.
Good for you. That's what Kira should have done.
Because
she didn't do that. And when there's an explosion and now she's under a bunch of debris.
I just want to say, when he had the tantrum, I went immediately to a story that Robbie told me about raising his kids, how he had put his son, his middle son, in the car, and he's putting the seatbelt on him, and the seatbelt thing snapped and hit his chest, you know, when it comes in, and he screamed, he's like, you're trying to kill me, and he just flipped out, and again, that happened when Robbie's trying to brush his Kyle said, I'm not going to brush my teeth, he's like, you're going to brush your teeth right now, Kyle's like, no. Yeah. Now, finally, Robbie starts to help him brush his teeth, and he's now choking on the toothbrush, and he's screaming. He's like, "You're trying to kill me, Daddy!" Everything's about so intense, and
he's Odo. Oh, he had
Odo. Odo, exactly. Gosh. So that temper tantrum made me think of Kyle and Robbie's stories entirely. So, yeah.
Oh my God!
Of course, he doesn't do that now. I mean, he's a responsible young man with a child.
Of course. Well, that's why you don't get mad.
No,
you're the adult. Yeah, you just move forward and don't accept that behavior by action.
Yes.
It's the best thing you can do. It's a pain in the ass because you got to go back to the grocery store.
Find your basket.
How long did you leave
I'm pretty sure I went without him the second time. But
Well, Kira is trying very hard, but Odo is just having a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
And then there's the big explosion with the bulkheads falling on them. And we cut to the bridge, big attack.
Yeah, that was pretty scary. When you think about being on the ship and you just never know when that might happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was very scary. This was a big attack. Like the shaking. Kim Friedman got some top-notch shaking out of everybody in this episode.
Yeah. and cameraman
too.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Martha Hackett says, or Tyrul says, she thinks they found a way to penetrate the cloak. Mm-hmm. Sisko says, all right, turn it off. Let's start fighting.
Yeah.
Prepare to fire.
Because when you have the cloak on, we all know there's no shields.
You cannot use your weapons.
Exactly. Oh, and you can't use mm-hmm. weapons either. So you have to turn the cloak off to raise the shields and use the weapons.
Yep.
The weapons on the USS Defiant, we get to hear them for the first time. They feature a very heavy machine gun type of sound effect. But all other episodes in this series involving the Defiant firing its weapons uses a different sound effect from this episode. So just this
episode,
they were testing what they liked. Yeah. So later they use a sound effect, which sounds like a cross between a phaser and a cannon. So that's the new sound instead of a machine gun sounding episode.
No,
a machine gun sounding sound. Yeah.
We tweak until we get it right.
Yeah, yep. Clearly.
Well, there's a major battle scene here. And of course, because Dax isn't there, they don't have a pilot. So who else should pilot the ship but the doctor?
Bashir.
I know, like, isn't that great? Like, everybody can do everything. So what's so special?
Like, are you kidding me?
Bashir,
the doctor?
In a battle. Whatever.
He's a Superman.
In a battle. He's not going down to the grocery store. He's
no.
Like,
Yeah. Yeah. The Red Baron. But the Defiant has some pretty good weapons that sound like machine guns in this episode. And it blows up. It does blow up one of the Jem'Hadar ships.
That's right.
Thank goodness.
Mm-hmm. So the Defiant's got some good weapons. Better than the Odyssey had in the last episode.
Yeah.
That giant starship couldn't take on the Jem'Hadar. But Defiant's
got this one can.
Stuff.
Yeah. And we needed that because it did look like from the last episode that it was a hopeless battle. And so to see one get destroyed by the Defiant's weapons gives the audience a little hope there.
Oh,
yep.
Yeah, that was pretty awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Two are left, though. And so Sisko yells to the pilot, the doctor, use evasive pattern Delta 5. Yeah, of course, that'll do it. And Bashir will know what that is because he's not a pilot.
But, and you know, he practices all the time.
Yeah.
In evasive the holosuite.
I'm going to say this. When Bashir was at Starfleet Academy, one of his upper division elective classes was evasive maneuvers. So he knows
so
that.
So he knew Delta 5. Yeah.
Maybe everybody has to take a little class.
On evasive maneuvers.
Maybe they
on evasive, because you never know who's going to end up having to pilot.
Exactly.
I don't know. You do have the... All joking aside,
yes,
the computer
is
can
really
do
doing
it.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, the computer can do it. Because remember when, just in that last episode of the end of the second season, when Rom and Jake are on the runabout, and the computer says, what's the code? It's like, he can't do it only because he doesn't know his dad's code.
Right.
So... you know, there's a lot of workarounds, I imagine.
I would think
I mean, if there's an autopilot feature on a shuttle, I'm sure there's an auto fighting button
simulator.
Or sequence. Yeah, simulator. On auto something, right?
Yeah.
Everything could just automatic at that point. You could.
Well, great. Then I didn't have a job on Voyager.
You did?
I guess they didn't need a pilot. They could have just said, fly the ship.
Well, I think it's always better
very
with a person.
You are taking it personally right now, Robbie.
This is my first day on my new job, and now the guy I won't date is flying my ship.
Exactly,
so.
Sitting in your seat.
I think I'm handling it remarkably well.
You are much better than me.
Oh, boy.
We cut back down to Odo and Kira. Odo's helping pull off debris and get her out from underneath the bulkhead, and they head off to the bridge. We cut back up to the bridge. There is a crewman dead in the scene. We see somebody's died.
Did we see him before? Or no?
I don't know.
Honestly, the first time I thought I saw him was him lying on the floor dead. And I thought, where did he come from? Okay.
I guess there must be some more people besides our regulars that had to come on the ship, right?
Right.
I guess.
And he was wearing red. So that was back to an homage of the original series.
Yes.
The red shirt dies.
Red shirts. Mm-hmm. Well, on the bridge, we find more Jem'Hadar approaching. Things are getting bad. Sisko tries to take off. He says to Tyrul, where's my warp power? And she can't get the phase inductors to align, so they can't go to warp. So he says, full impulse, let's just get out of here. And down in the corridor, when Odo and Kira are heading back, Odin wants to go to a shuttle. He wants to go to a shuttle and get out of there.
Kira wants to go to the bridge.
Yeah, our duty is to stay in the bridge. And he says, if main power's out, then the shields are out and this ship is defenseless. We should bail out of here, get in a shuttle. But that's when the Jem'Hadar beam in. There's just a little hand-to-hand fighting. Back up on the bridge, more hand-to-hand fighting. Kira shows up.
Well, the Jem'Hadar, don't they beam onto the bridge first? And then after Kira and Odo have their little conversation about the runabout, then they...
It's all intercut. I can't remember, yeah, but the Jem'Hadar are just... They're
Yeah, it's just like, yeah.
They're everywhere.
There's so much going on. But the one thing I did track that I thought was odd was Tyrul's at a console at one point. She's trying to do something and she's tapping and all of a sudden it blows out and she flies back. Oh, yeah. Then later in the fight thing, she's back at the same console, which is completely pristine, and she's tapping more commands. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Oh,
maybe they intercut things out of sequence.
Out of sequence. So, and I was like, you can't show a blown out panel.
Out of sequence.
Then, yeah. So it is what it is.
Sequence. Well, sounded like you said sequence.
As in little sequins, like shiny stuff?
Sparkly things.
All right.
Yeah, you have to have sequins if you want to fight the Jem'Hadar.
When you think about
that, blinds them. If you have a uniform made of sequins, they can't see. The Jem'Hadar are like, can't see. Exactly. Or the Jem'Hadar are so into the fabulousness of all sequin uniform that they just stop in awe looking, watching.
The Jem'Hadar are like disco. So we know that.
Can I just say something, too? I'm going to just say something.
Go, say it.
It is remarkable that in 10, maybe this was shot in 14 because we had back-to-back episodes that was a two-parter, so I don't know. But on average, about a 10-day shoot to do this high action, lots of special effects, lots of fight scenes. It's incredible, the production value and how well everything gets put together, all things considered. It's no wonder people are just like, wow, that looks amazing.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you had the time you had to do it. Yes, it's so incredibly fast.
I feel like on our show, we had 7-day shoots or 7 or 8 days per episode. And then a second unit to do inserts and things.
Terry, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you were in scenes where stuff was getting blown up and sparks were happening, did you ever get kind of burned the sparks hitting your skin?
They were always far enough away that I didn't have an issue.
God, that we did. Lucky. Robbie and I, all the time, we were burned.
Really?
The entire time. Oh,
we got little sparks.
Well, we had the good team.
I guess you did.
We had the A team.
I guess you had the A team.
Robbie.
I did fall and hurt myself and learned very quickly to not say anything and just go for another take and then deal with whatever was, you know, blood coming down my leg or whatever, because if everybody stops to try to fix whatever it is, it takes a lot longer than it does to just suck it up and go for that second take. I mean, I remember once falling and hitting into, I slipped and hit into an edge. When that episode comes up, I won't forget it, but gave me an egg and took skin as I,
And you just went and did a second take right away?
Yes, because I could tell. My mom said we should have called you Grace, because seriously, I was very much a klutz. So I get hurt a lot. I have lots of scars on my knees, on my hands, my shins.
What a team player for you to go through and still do that scene. That's incredible.
Honestly, you're so sweet. No, because you're going to have to do it anyway.
But you were so bleeding, really, though.
But it's being prudent. It's like, I was wearing. It's black wool. You can't see it.
Okay.
And it was better. I didn't break anything other than skin.
Right. That's true. No bones.
I don't know. It just seems really smart to just keep going as best you can. I know that doesn't work always. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I broke my leg, obviously I would have stopped.
Yeah. That would have been.
I'm surprised nobody got hurt in this sequence, because this sequence was rough. I mean, it was really intense.
A lot of the hand-to-hand fighting, if you noticed, it's clear that we learned from this episode that the most effective way to deal with the Jem'Hadar in hand-to-hand fighting is to use the two-handed Kirk. Everyone used the two-handed.
Was that
hilarious?
Used
the two-hander.
Yeah. Okay, it made sense when Nana was doing it, because I mean, Kira, she's the slight.
She's a Bajoran.
She's tough, but she's still a woman, and she's slender.
Mm.
She's not super tall. She's slender. She's a slight woman.
Yeah.
And she needs to use both hands.
She had a, but everyone was using it. I think Everybody used it. Cisco used a two-hander.
Was that a Kirk thing? Was that an original series?
It's an original series thing, but this is literally the most ineffective way to fight somebody. I'm going to tell you right now, in real life, if you try to do this, you're going to break your, yes, because the finger that's the closest, this one right here, is going to end up getting broken when you,
multiple times.
1000% correct on that.
Yeah, you're crushing it. It's terrible.
But in the world of Star Trek, that is the most effective way.
Do they know not to do this when they fight?
Yeah, they're doing. They're probably doing that when they punch too. They're sticking their thumb right in the inside, which is going to break your thumb. So yeah, but in Star Trek, it works perfectly. But in real life, ladies and gentlemen, please do not use the two-handed trying to defend yourself.
How about let's just not get in that situation?
Try not to have a hand-to-hand.
Well, Kira does take the last phaser hit that we see and falls into a close-up on the ground.
Yep.
And then there's this nice kind of dissolve. I like this transition because she's out on the ground, kind of fades to black, and then comes back up in the same kind of frame. Yep. She's waking up, which I thought was very, very cool.
The transition, really
she's waking up inside the shuttle. Odo's piloting. Again, everybody can pilot. I guess Odo can pilot. I guess Bashir can pilot. I guess.
Well, I wonder too. Wait. Just a thought.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, we all know how to drive a car. I don't want to drive a semi, but if we're push come to shove and you need someone to drive it, I'm all in.
Okay.
Good to know.
Yes.
But I imagine that if you can't be driving a car, a runabout can't possibly be that far from something that maybe everybody should kind of have an idea of how to do.
The basics.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fine. Robbie's just taking it personally because he feels like he's obsolete.
You're very special.
Thank
you. You're very special, Paris.
Thank you.
And you're a big weirdo for taking it personally.
Well, Odo's piloting like everybody else can. And he says, tells Kira, the Defiant was surrounded by the enemy when they escaped. Right. Kira asks, where are we? And Odo says, the Omarion Nebula. And then Kira picks up a rogue planet in the Omarion Nebula. Odo is very focused on this. There's a Class M planet, no star system. A rogue planet? Yes, Odo, that's where he wanted to go. That's what he's been drawn to.
Yeah.
So we cut down to the planet's surface. They've landed. They're walking through some rocks and things. They get to the shore of this kind of gooey lake or pond or something.
This wild viscosity.
Well,
happening.
Yes. It's the same. It's the same goo as what he turns into when his resting state. You see, it's the same exact.
I think that was intentional.
Yes.
Oh, I think so.
As a tell, right? It reminds you right away when you see the pond surface.
Yeah.
Kind of.
That's a bunch of
undulating.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't think I've used the word undulating in the podcast yet.
Yeah. Ever? Well, you just did it now. The undulating goo.
It worked.
Yes,
it worked
thank you.
Yeah, we see three figures though, right? Is it three that come out of the water?
Something like that.
Undulating
goo. And then a fourth.
Goo? Yeah, maybe a four. And they walk up.
The fourth.
Yes.
The fourth. That's her name.
Salome.
The fourth.
Salome Jens is the one that comes up and says, welcome home. And here's my problem with this. I don't understand why. We know that Odo fashioned his face and hair off of his Bajoran science guy that he was doing.
I thought the same thing. Keep going.
Salome Jens should not look anything like Odo, but she looks like Odo's cousin or sister because it's exactly the same hair, the same face, the same whatever. So I thought to validate this, maybe Salome Jens and the other shapeshifters wanted to make Odo feel comfortable, so they copied what
that's what I thought.
Is that
that's
what,
what I thought?
Yeah.
That's what I thought too. Okay. That they, before they were completely formed.
Yeah. They saw him.
He's taken on this form.
We'll take on the same form to make him
feel comfortable, right?
Like every other alien movie where they say, well, I'm only taking, or devil thing where they're saying, I take this form because you're most comfortable with it kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's what it was. Okay.
Yeah.
To be continued. To be continued.
My goodness.
And I didn't even watch the second one yet because I thought I would get too confused.
Yeah, I haven't watched it either.
I already
I'm terrified.
I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. I jumped ahead and watched it. It's
don't.
I'm not gonna say anything. What's the theme and the moral, the lesson of this episode? Robbie McNeil, what did you get?
I got from this, this was a hard one because there was so much action and there was a lot of storylines and season premiere. But the thing that kind of echoed with me the most is Odo's story and the idea that your true home, the place you really belong, is always going to have a strong pull. Because I can relate to that, you know, that I, as you know, even in the years that I left, you know, my family and home, went to New York City or California or whatever, I always felt like that place that I came from, just there's something about it that feels comforting when I go there, when I go to visit family. Mm-hmm. It just feels like, oh yeah, this has got a pull somewhere deep inside of me.
So, okay.
Yeah. All right. Home's always going to have a pull. That's my lesson.
Terry, any lesson that you want to divulge?
I don't know exactly why I came up with this, but I just felt like you got to think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
Came up for me. Some of it, I think, was the defiant.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Odo, too. Like, he's following his instincts right now rather mm-hmm. than doing a logical red yep. tape, going through that, looking for his, he's trusting his instincts. But anyway, yeah, color outside the lines, think outside mm-hmm. the box. Yeah.
Yeah, it was hard for me as well. I was sitting here going, what can I get out of this? And I kept thinking more about Cisco even taking on this mission. And this mission mm-hmm. is to inform the founders that we come in peace, is what it is. And so he literally went on a mission that is against all odds, because the chances of him not making it to the end is pretty great when dealing with the Jem'Hadar and going into an unknown Gamma Quadrant and trying to find an unknown location of the founders. So, yeah, just sticking with your principles, no matter what the outside world or the outside influences mm-hmm. are trying to point you into another, you know, to go in another direction. So mm-hmm. I guess sticking to your, I don't know if I say sticking to your guns, that's not the right word.
Instincts?
Sticking to your, yeah.
Being determined.
Listen to your gut?
Listen. Well, sticking by your principles, I suppose, is what, mm-hmm. what kind of drove him to go onto this mission to begin with. And a lot of times people will, their principle or their idea will be an unpopular one to other people. Mm-hmm. People will say, well, that's stupid, or that's not going to work. Or, mm-hmm. and again, as human beings, all of us have heard that at one point in our lives with our careers, like, that's not going to happen. Or people, there's a lot of doubters around. So mm-hmm. I guess the lesson is to sort of turn down the volume and all the doubters around you is my right. lesson.
Right? Ah, I like that.
Yeah.
I like that too.
Okay. Thank you.
The winner of the Patreon poll for moral theme of the episode is submitted by Anne. Odo looks like an adult, but he's really an adolescent, and he's got a lot of maturing and self-discovery ahead.
Nice.
Well, yeah.
More of a commentary than a theme, like people, or lesson.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
But people who've had severe trauma or, you know, addicts, when that addiction starts, their growth.
They get stuck.
They get stuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they get healthy and they get recovery,
mm-hmm.
then that is part of their recovery, is picking up where they left off.
I like that theme or that commentary in a way, because it's a reminder that all of us have some growing to do, just like Odo.
Yes.
Like he thinks he's grown up, but you know, we may think we're all grown up and we've learned, you know,
yeah,
we figured it all out, but there's always some more growth to be had.
Yeah, there, and so. Poor Odo had this... He felt like he was in charge.
Yeah.
Which must have felt like delusional, because it's being stripped away from him. Somebody mm-hmm. else is in charge. And oh, that has to be so maddening for him.
Yeah.
Real tough.
I can't wait for part two.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in to our recap and discussion of Search Part One. Join us next time when we will be recapping and discussing The Search Part 2 with Terry yet again. So thank you again to Terry for joining us for Search Part 1. Thank you, Terry.
Thank
and
you.
We'll see all of you next time. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. See ya.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.